December 15th is the first day the Phoenix Suns are allowed to trade Trevor Ariza. This we have already established here as we go into the 5 o'clock hour of the Burns and Gambo show. But whether it actually happens this Saturday or not, Bobby Marks, NBA front office insider from ESPN, formerly GM of the Nets, poured a little cold water on that idea when he was on Bickley and Murata today.
Well, I don't want to pour cold water, not on Ariza, but on December 15th. And I know it is kind of the unofficial date, but, I mean, we haven't had a trade since 2010 on December 15th. So it is, the restrictions are lifted on free agents, but teams are a little bit in a holding pattern.
And that, even though it's the first day, Gambo, they can trade Ariza, doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be the day they trade Trevor Ariza.
No, I think, but listen, they've had a lot of forewarning that, okay, this we got to try to make a trade. One, the Suns desperately need to get players in. He had different players. They need a point guard. And listen, this Ariza thing didn't work out, okay? It just didn't work out. So, you know, you've had plenty of time. And I, like I've said, there are a lot of calls going on. You might have your first trade on December 15th. You might. Now, again, he played last night, so there's no deal done. If he's going to play tonight, there's no deal done. Now, again, they get a day off and then they play Thursday. If he plays Thursday, there's no deal done. As long as he keeps playing, there's no deal done. The second they have a deal, they shut him down. He doesn't play.
Right.
They'll wait a couple days. It's not like you got to wait 3 weeks. You know, you got to wait a couple of days and you're not going to risk an injury as we talked about. I do think they want to move him. I think they want to move him for him. And I think they want to move him for them. I think they want to move the guy. And obviously, you know, they are, as I reported, they are talking to a lot of different teams, not just, you know, one or two teams. They're talking to at least eight different teams about Ariza. So there's heavy interest. So I don't know how you don't make a deal, you know, close to December 15th. You know, I mean, unless teams are reluctant to pay the $7 million left on his contract, because that's what you're going to have to do if you trade from now. You'll have to take on the $7 million. I don't know if a team wants to wait till the deadline. They most likely are going to want to get the guy in there as soon as they possible, because if he can come in and help, he can help them with draft position, playoff positioning and things like that.
Yeah. A couple of things that you have shut down when it comes to trading Ariza. Number one, I think it was yesterday when you said, look, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope? No. It's not going to be for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Now, most of the Lakers rumors that we've seen haven't involved Kentavious Caldwell-Pope coming to the Suns. It's been like a three-team trade, right? And Pope is the one who leaves the Lakers and goes somewhere. But you ruled out yesterday, it's not going to be for KCP. He's not coming here.
No.
There's something else today that you're ready to rule out as a potential return in a Trevor Ariza deal, and that would be?
Markelle Fultz. I keep hearing all these reports that, you know, three-way deal, and they're going to get, they so, you know, you have Philly and the Lakers and the Suns, and the key piece coming back to Phoenix would be Markelle Fultz. Hey, in all of my discussions, there is nothing that would make me believe that they have any interest in Markelle Fultz. To the contrary, everything that I'm hearing is that they have no interest in him, like zero. Like, there's absolutely no interest. It doesn't make sense. They don't want another developmental player. They can't take a chance on a guy that they have no idea of. They need a player. Like, they have enough guys they're trying to develop. They've got enough young guys they're working with. They don't need another problem, you know, and 50-50. Is the guy going to make it or not? Maybe it's not even 50-50. Maybe it's 70-30. Who knows? But the guy's been a bust so far over 2 years. He can't shoot the basketball. Nobody's really buying this, oh, he's injured thing. Really, nobody's buying that. So to me, I think that's where, you know, this the talk for Fultz, again, I'm gonna squash it and just say I don't see it. I don't see it. Now, I could be wrong, but I doubt that I am. I believe that they don't have interest in Fultz. They want to get something back of substance, and Fultz is not substance.
Bobby Marks, again, when he was on Bickley and Murata, was asked by the fellas what point guards are even available starting on December 15th.
Well, the hard part's going to be is that we're in a period now where there's going to be so many free agents this year. So the guys out there that potentially could be available, that maybe the Spencer Dinwiddies of the world, I doubt Terry Rozier will be available just based on that team is going to try to win it for, you know, trying to win it all this year, and they'll figure out really what happens with Rozier in the off season. But yeah, guys like Dinwiddie, if you go out and give Brooklyn a solid offer, he certainly is available. But then you got to pay him in the off season.
Yeah, and Bobby Marks went on to say, Gambo, and this is something we've talked about for a couple of weeks now. Looking for a point guard right now, this is not a good time to be looking for a point guard.
It's not a good spot to be in looking for a point guard right now. You know, John Wall's available, but do you want to go out and you know, owe him 4 years, $170 million?
No.
That's your big free agent. And the guy who's got, you know, bone spurs right now. You know, Reggie Jackson is available for Detroit. And, you know, that would basically tie up, most of your cap space for this upcoming summer. I mean, those are the type of guys that that teams are looking to move that are available. And if I'm Phoenix, they're not real appealing to me.
Tough spots being if you're the Suns right now.
That's the thing. I mean, that's why if there are probably 16, 17 elite point guards in the NBA, we say, okay, that guy's an elite point guard. It's not every team has an elite point guard. A lot of teams don't have great point guards. You could stick with what you have and just keep going. Like last night, Melton and Okobo worked. I mean, it worked last night. It was good. You could stick with it and just try to develop these guys on the fly with what they're doing. So Okobo's in the G League for two games now.
Yep.
So Melton is here tonight for the San Antonio game with Noah Okobo, and then it'll switch back and forth. I mean, you could keep doing that, and then just address it in the offseason and see what you can do. Or you could try to use Ariza to go get you somebody now. I know you like the short-term answer, not getting rid of a draft pick, but getting rid of a player who has no future and he's old, and you get somebody in here just to take some of the pressure off. Now, remember this. If you do get a point guard, that means one of those guys is going to have to stay in the G League a lot, or they could switch him back and forth. You know, I'll develop, Okobo will play a couple games in the G League, and then Melton will play a couple games. And Okobo, sure. And then Melton, because they can't have both of those guys on the roster here, because one of them's not going to play if you do bring in a point guard.
Yeah, I mean, look, and that's you're absolutely right. What I advocate when it comes to Trevor Ariza is I don't want the Suns to use Ariza to find the point guard of the future. I mean, if they can, great. If they can, they should try. But I also think what's almost as important right now is to find a point guard right now. I mean, somebody who can capably play the position so that you're not relying on two rookies to do it. So you're not asking Devin Booker to do it every single night.
Take the pressure
night.
Off of Booker and other players too, so they can get a point guard and get them some shots.
Yeah. And to me, that is an acquisition that is worth sacrificing Trevor Ariza. Because I'm not talking about sacrificing a draft pick, which I know you love.
I'm not talking about
sacrificing something of any real value moving forward. I'm talking about disposing of a disposable asset to band-aid the problem. You know, give me somebody today, now, who can help me out at the point guard position, and I'll worry about tomorrow. This team desperately needs a somewhat of a veteran point guard to come onto this court and help them win basketball games. I'm willing to sacrifice Trevor Ariza to do that and not have it damage any long-term asset acquisition that the Suns are going for.
Would you
right
be okay
now
with Lonzo Ball?
I
don't think they want him. I really don't. But I would want Ball.
I would very much want Lonzo Ball.
He fits. He checks off some boxes that I like. One, he can defend.
Mm-hmm.
Two, he could create. Now, he's not the best at knocking down shots, but I like his size. I like that he can defend. He is creative. He's a good... Now, I don't think that they would give him up for Trevor Ariza. I really don't. I mean, no. They're going to give up a guy who was, one of the top picks in the draft just a couple of years ago for an older Trevor Ariza. I don't see that. And again, I mean, I don't know that the Lakers, based on my conversation, I don't know that the Lakers are the front runner for Trevor Ariza. I just know they're one of the teams that have called.
Yeah.
And that they would prefer not to trade with the Lakers if they don't have to. They don't want to make their chief competitors better, even if it's just for 1 year. They don't really want to make them better. So I don't know that it's the Lakers that get Ariza. I really don't. I mean, there's a chance that it's not the Lakers because there are so many teams that are interested in him.
Lonzo Ball does some things really well.
Checks a few boxes,
You're right. You're not going to get him for Trevor Ariza. I think that's a dream. It's never going to happen. And another thing about Lonzo Ball, and I will say this, it's been, knock on wood, it's been a long time since we've heard from LeVar. Have you noticed that?
Yes.
Is it just that we're not paying attention anymore, or is he not talking as much?
I don't think he's talking as much because his kids,
LeVar's done. I mean, not done. I just, we haven't heard from him. He's been invisible for the last few
months.
Probably
designing a new shirt or creating a new tournament. But you're right. We have not heard from him, which is good. And maybe the media is just ignoring him, which they should have done all along.
Yeah. He's finally beginning to show why he was a first-round pick. But now that he's on the injured reserve, what exactly is the future of Robert Kimdichie in Arizona? We'll get into that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
You must learn.
It's the Knowledge Drop.
Let knowledge drop.
The Knowledge Drop. Brought to you by Lifetime Windows. Did you know metal window frames conduct heat right into your home? Visit LifetimeWindowsAZ.com.
When talking about Robert Kimdichie, which is what we're about to do here on the Burns and Gambo Show, it's important to note this as the knowledge drop today. Robert Kamdichie is second on the team to Chandler Jones in sacks. Robert Kamdichie is tied for second on the team with Benson Mayowa in tackles for loss. Robert Kamdichie is third on the team behind Chandler Jones and Mayowa with 7 quarterback hits.
Somewhat productive.
And he's only played in about 46.5% of the snaps, according to the story I read this morning on the Revenge of the Birds website. Now, yeah. I'm not going to lie to you. Those numbers kind of surprised me a little bit when I read them. I mean, I knew about the sacks, right? I mean, he's been remarkably unproductive in that category since he's been drafted.
He didn't have any at all.
And so for him to finally be productive on that front has been noteworthy. But to see the quarterback hits, to see the tackles for loss, to see how he's only played about half the time, half of the available snaps, kind of speaks to a productivity level of Robert Kamdichie that I frankly wasn't expecting to see.
Yeah. No, I don't. The problem with him is, okay, so he had a little bit, he had a jump up this year, right? In games that he played, we finally saw that he could be somewhat productive, okay? But he's out again. He's injured. He can't stay healthy. He's played in 46% of the snaps. So you're not seeing a guy that can go out there and just, you know, gut it out all the time and stay healthy and be on the field. And in the NFL, I mean, the most important thing is your availability. You got to be available, and he's not available a whole lot. Look, they've got a decision to make by May on whether they're going to pick up his fifth-year option. Right now, it's very doubtful. Okay, very doubtful that they're going to pick up that option. And I just think, and if he's not going to play any more games this year, there's nothing else to base it on. I mean, it's not like he's going to go out in the next 3 games and get 3 sacks. He's not playing. He's done. So it's not like he can do anything. So whatever the feeling is now on Kamdichie, I mean, it's going to stay the same. I mean, I don't think there's anything that you can... Now, we have to see what kind of surgery he had, too. There was a lot of discussion on the surgery. I mean, if he had a minor surgery, well, then, you know, okay, he could come back and play next year. If he's got a major surgery, he may be out all of next year.
Yeah.
Because remember, any major injuries now, I mean, the season's almost over. It's not like having an injury in August. Where you got 4 more months now, or even September. Injuries that are happening now in mid-December, mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of them, anything that's a serious injury, probably puts you out for the year next year.
Yesterday, it was announced by Steve Wilks that Robert Kamdichie is going to the injured reserve and his season is done.
Disappointing news with Robert Kamdichie. His knee, he's going on IR.
But Wilks refused, and it's his prerogative to do so, okay? So I'm not ripping him for refusing it, but I find it kind of curious. He refused to get into details about Robert Kamdichie's injury and how serious it was.
I'm not going to get into the details. He just, you know, he hurt his knee, and we're going to have to place him on IR.
I wasn't there, but apparently he was asked twice about it. And the second answer was word for word, almost exactly the same as the first. I'm not going to get into it. I'm not going to get into the specifics about what type of surgery we're talking about or what type of injury it was. To your point, if it's arthroscopic, okay, no big deal.
No big deal. You come back and play next year. You'll be fine. Be ready to go.
If, and we don't know the answer to this, and I haven't seen it. I don't know if you've heard
it.
If it's any type of major reconstructive injury, well, think about it. Marcus Golden blew out his knee, what, in October of last year? He wasn't ready for the start of this season, and he wasn't really himself until just about a few weeks ago. And even then, Marcus Golden hasn't had the kind of Marcus Golden type season that we saw from him 2 years ago, right? I mean,
right.
he's been the recovery from that major knee surgery.
This year, next year, he could probably have more of an impact. This year, it's just been just trying to get through it and play on it and figure it out and learn your body and all of that stuff.
So now you're talking about like a 2-year deal.
Well, but
right? you're talking about almost all of last year and this year where he's been healthy, but he hasn't quite been himself. If that's what Robert Kamdichie is facing, then that's the game changer when it comes to an easy decision. You're not picking up that fifth-year option on him in May when you have to make that decision. If that's the kind of surgery he needs, we don't know.
If he's out all of next year. Now, listen, even if he can come back next year at some point, you might do an injury settlement with him and let him go somewhere else. If he's out, you got to pay him. I mean, you got to pay him. So you can't like cut him and not pay him. You'll have to pay him if he got injured and he's going through a surgery. It's not like you can get him off the books, but you're certainly not going to pick up the fifth year option right now. I believe it's doubtful. And I don't have anything else other than doubtful that they would pick up that fifth-year option on Kamdichie, which, again, we always get to that point. It sucks when you have a player – that you drafted in the first round and you can't get to that second contract. You can't get to that fifth-year option. Because in some ways, it means that that failed. It means that that player didn't work out. For whatever reason, it didn't work out. And it happens to every team. First-round draft picks, a lot of them don't get that second-year contract, but you got to have a certain amount of years to evaluate. Now, they picked up the fifth-year option on DJ Humphries. I don't know that they go any further than the fifth-year option, but I'm not expecting right now that they would pick up that fifth-year option on Robert Kim Dietzsche.
Yeah, and just so I'm clear about this, he's under contract for 2019. Kim Dietzsche.
Next year, yep.
The fifth-year option wouldn't kick in until 2020.
Right.
But they have to decide in May whether they're going to pick up that fifth-year option or not. And you know, like you say, right now, you're hearing that it's doubtful they're going to do that. Right now, we don't know what the issue is with the knee, and maybe we'll get more detail from Steve Wilks tomorrow. Maybe we won't. I don't know. It's not like required for him to tell us exactly what's going on, but it is kind of curious that he was asked about it twice yesterday and both times he gave the same answer. It's almost impossible to judge Robert Kim Dietzsche. I think we can all agree with that. He has played, by the time the season is done, and I got this from Darren Urban over at azcardinals.com, he was able to play in 48 games since he was drafted by the Cardinals. He's only going to have played in 27 of those 48.
Availability.
And in a lot of those, he was not very productive at all.
Now, he doesn't even get the chance next year. DJ Humphries will get the chance to wow him in a contract year. DJ Humphries will get the chance with the fifth-year option. Let me wow you. Let me show you that I'm a great, that I'm a top-10 left tackle. And if he does that, well, then maybe that changed their perception and they're thinking, okay, is DJ finally figured it out? Now, again, it's in a contract year, so he's going to be playing for money, so that could be what motivates him. Kim Dietzsche may not get that chance. If he is out next year, if this injury is bad and he can't play, and we don't know that, but if it is, he doesn't even get the chance to wow him. You know, because, and again, DJ had his fifth-year option picked up. If his availability is in question for next year, look, there's no way they're going to pick up the fifth-year option. And I don't even think they pick it up if they think he's going to get back either. So I think either way, they don't pick it up. So if he does play next year, he's playing on a showcase year. I'm going to showcase my skills for everybody, including the Cardinals. They could always keep him.
They could bring him back if they
but,
wanted to.
I don't think he gets that, you know, fifth-year option picked up when it comes to May. I think, you know, they'll probably move on from him. And again, it's tough because, you know, I think a year later they could move on from DJ as well. Because I don't think DJ has proven to be very available for them over the years.
Yeah, one thing that you said a second ago, and we'll continue to kind of look at this, is obviously the Cardinals have these big decisions to make. And I'm not just talking about Kim Dietzsche. I'm talking about Wilks. I'm talking about Kime. I'm talking about all the things that could be in play when this season ends. You look at a guy like Robert Kim Dietzsche, you look at a guy like DJ Humphries, and you said, you know, in some ways it's a failure because they don't make it to their second contract. Understand that Steve Keim is not the only general manager in the league who has that kind of success rate when it comes to first rounders or second rounders or third rounders.
Or failure rate.
Or failure rate, if you want to look at it. If you look at his numbers compared to a lot of his colleagues as general managers,
he's
in
middle
the
of the pack.
He's kind of middle of the pack.
Middle of the pack.
When
he's
it comes
not towards
to,
the bottom.
Yep. When it comes to
all of these
draft
teams
picks
are struggling,
sticking, and when it comes to them being successful, it doesn't feel that way. But we're not paying as much attention to the other 31 guys as we are to Steve Keim in his drafts.
Right.
He's kind of middle of the road when it comes to the success level, the stickiness, if you will, of these guys that he's drafted.
Well, it just goes to show you
years.
How hard it is to evaluate a player in college and to determine whether he could be a good player in an NFL system. I mean, it's not an easy thing to do. So he's had his struggles with it. And, you know, you figure with all these draft picks, you'll hit a couple of them. Some years you hit on four or five guys. Some years you hit on none. Some of these guys. I mean, some years you have a draft. Like, we've gone through it. I mean, some of their draft in the past draft, whole draft classes haven't made it. You know, you can look back. How about that draft class from 2013, 14, 15, whatever it is. There are some that didn't make it at all, and there's some where you got four or five good guys. But, you know, you want to hit on your first-round picks. And the thing about Kim Dietzsche is that he was a first-round pick.
The Phoenix Suns have been a mess at times this season, a mess that is now getting noticed by the rest of the league. We'll explain coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Well, you talk about fortuitous timing. This tweet just plays right into what we're about to talk about here for the next few minutes on the Burns and Gambo Show on this Tuesday afternoon. This is from Dwayne Rankin. He's the beat writer for AZ Central. He covers the Phoenix Suns. He's there in San Antonio with the team right now. He just tweeted out a minute ago, former GM Ryan McDonough is here at Suns Spurs. looks like a stress-free man right now. I bet he does, Dwayne.
Yeah.
I bet he does.
Yep.
I bet he looks like a happy, happy dude. He's getting
kinda
paid.
Kind of like Escape from Alcatraz almost, huh?
Yeah, except that, you know, when Ryan swam across the channel, he was still getting paid for 2 years of his work
sure.
as being general manager of the Suns. Yeah,
yeah.
I don't have to deal with that mess. It ties into what we're talking about because there was a Sports Illustrated article today that you sent over to me, and the headline says it all. The Bulls and Suns and the power of bad ownership. And the premise of the article is sort of based off of how the Bulls and the Suns have basically traded the last 2 weeks alternating bad headlines, right?
Right.
And this is bad. This is worse. This is even worse. This is even worse. And they're almost like trying to top each other in how dysfunctional they are. And the conclusion, the easy conclusion to draw, and Sports Illustrated draws it, quote, there are a dozen different things to say about the dysfunction that defines both of these teams, but more than anything else, each team is its own testament to the power of terrible ownership, close quote.
Listen, it all starts with ownership. Like, I mean, that's it all starts there. So, you know, you could sit now, the owner is not selling the team, and you can't fire the owner. You could fire the coach, you could fire the GM, you could get rid of the players, but you just don't have the ability to fire the owner. It's his team, you know, so you can't fire him. But it is, I mean, when you've got an organization that is struggling from top to bottom like this, you always have to look at the top, at ownership. And this ownership has, for some reason, does not hire people with experience. Guys that are, you know, coaches or GMs that have any experience. Since Alvin Gentry left, everybody that's getting opportunities to coach or be the GM, it's their first time. Every coach, you know, whether it was Earl Watson or Lindsey Hunter or Terry Porter or even Jeff Hornacek, mm-hmm. and now Igor Kokoschkov, all first-time coaches, okay? If you go to GMs and presidents, you're talking about Lance Blanks and Lon Babby and Ryan McDonough. Although Ryan, you can really make the argument that Ryan was an up-and-coming guy with the Celtics organization, did a good job, said he deserved it. James Jones, guy was playing 2 years ago, and I was a general manager of a team. So you could obviously make, you know, the connection that, I mean, they're just not hiring anybody. And listen, anytime you're hiring an assistant coach, you have no idea whether that guy's going to be a good head coach. You don't know.
Sure.
You just don't know if he's going to be. You're hoping, but you don't know if a guy who's been an assistant is going to be a good head coach. You just have no idea. So it's a crapshoot.
It's funny. I was listening to you rattle off the names. I might have missed one.
No,
I think you did, but that's okay. The one time where I think it was defendable, okay, was the summer that they hired Ryan and Jeff. Because they were, not only was Ryan an up-and-comer, Jeff was an up-and-comer too, right? I mean, he was the lead assistant in Utah. He was long considered to be a head coaching candidate. That, to me, is really one of the very few times where it felt like Robert hired who should have been hired, right? Guys who were truly on the precipice of needing to be a general manager and having their own team to run, needing to be a head coach and having their own team to lead. And it worked. I mean, they won 48 games. Ryan that summer was like a blackjack player who was just making every right decision on when to hit and when, you know, he was with all the trades that he made, the Scola trade, the Bledsoe trade. Ryan was on fire that summer, and Jeff coached that team up to a 40-win season, and it looked like everything was good. But every other hire other than those two, it was, well, we're going to hire Earl Watson even though he's never done this before and he's not even close to having done this before. Lindsey Hunter, James Jones. James Jones has never been close to being a general manager in this league, and now he's acting as the general manager of the Suns. It's all done so that nobody can question Robert when he comes in and wants to do this or wants to do that, because experienced guys will say, no, this is what I want to do. No, I'm going to, you know, it's that experience that allows guys to tell Robert, hey, I got this, you know, I'll do what I need
to
do.
You're not walking in to the locker room after the game and going into the coach's meeting and demanding this, you're like, you know, with a veteran experienced coach.
Right.
You're not. Call me later. We'll talk about it. Or, you know, you're not, So you're not having as much involvement. Listen, every owner has to be involved, okay? Every owner has to sign off on every final decision. It's just the way it works.
Of course.
So nothing gets done. The Paul Goldschmidt trade did not go down without Mike Hazen going to Ken Kendrick and saying, okay, here's what we have. Are you okay with this? Has to happen that way. In every sport, the owner is going to have the final say, okay, I need to know. You're not going to make a move without the knowing, so the owner needs to know.
But what have you said? I'm glad you brought this up. What have you said about Ken Kendrick and his level of trust and respect?
It's the highest it's ever been with any front office he's ever had as the Diamondbacks owner, to the point where if they say they want to trade Goldie, he will okay it. I mean, but again, he still has to okay it, but he will follow their lead.
But that level of trust is what has to happen for the Phoenix Suns. And I don't know if it ever will. I don't know if it ever will. I don't know if it'll ever get to the point where
Robert gives up full control. Okay, I'm just going to sit back and I'm going to hire a GM and you're going to hire the coach and then I'm going to let you guys do what you do.
Yeah.
Because Vinny, come to me for final approval and I'm going to give you my full support.
Vinny and Dan made such a good point about this today, and I never really thought of it this way before. Robert bought the team for what, $400
million? $400
million. How much is it worth now?
$1.2 billion.
$1.2 billion. So it's tripled in value since he purchased it, all right? By and large, for at least the last 10 years or so, 8 or 9 years, they haven't been any good, and he's still making money. So there's the motivation to change, right? The motivation to change how it is that you do what you do when you own this basketball team.
Well, you got to want to win.
You do, but he's been very profitable not winning. And I'm not saying he's not trying to win. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that if I'm Robert Sarver and I'm looking at dollars and cents with this, no matter how the product has been on the court, my value has gone up, right? My investment has tripled so far. I'm making money. Why would I want to leave this blackjack table right now? I mean, everything I'm touching has turned to gold when it comes to this basketball team and how much more money I'm making. It makes it difficult to be motivated to do anything differently when what you're doing now from a financial standpoint is working so well.
Yeah. I mean, you can't argue that, right? $400 million investment, now worth $1.2 billion.
Right.
Can't argue that.
Can't argue that.
And you're not winning. So, but there is a competitive nature. And, you know, I think the guy wants to win. I don't know if he knows how to win, but I think he wants to win. I think, like, they spent $15 million on Ariza. They spent the money on Ryan Anderson. Even it was just terrible moves.
Yeah.
Back when they got Warwick and Turkoglu and, you know, and those players, it was like, okay, they're spending money. They're just not spending it wisely.
Tomorrow is our annual Holiday Heroes broadcast benefiting the 100 Club of Arizona. They're an organization that gives financial relief to the families of our first responders, fallen and injured firefighters, police officers, public safety officers. We do this every year. People really react to it in our audience when we kind of dedicate the day to the 100 Club. You and I are going to be on the air from 10 until 6. And there are all sorts of ways you can donate. It starts by texting 100 Club, 100 Club to 62620.
Well, listen to this. If you text 100 Club to 62620 right now and you give a $100 donation, you have a chance to win the ultimate Arizona sports fan experience. Let me tell you what that is. You get a fat scooter, you get an on-field experience and tickets to a Diamondbacks game, you get courtside seats to a Suns game, you get an on-field experience and lower-level tickets to a Cardinals game, glass seats to a Coyote game, and a courtside seat with Jerry Colangelo at a GCU game.
Wow.
All of that. $100 donation to the 100 Club of Arizona. It is a 501(c) nonprofit organization, so you could use it as a tax write-off. Fat scooter, on-field experience and tickets to the D-backs, courtside seats to the Suns, on-field experience, lower-level tickets to the Cardinals, glass seats for a hockey game, and you sit courtside with Jerry Colangelo at a GCU game. Make a $100 donation now. You could do it right now. Just text 100 Club to 620-620.
From the Paul Goldschmidt trade to who could be his closer next season, Troy Lovello was talkative today at the winter meetings. You're going to hear what he had to say next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Here's a new rumor from the winter meetings of Major League Baseball. I love this stuff. I could talk about this stuff all day long.
Yeah.
I really could. According to John Heyman, the Dodgers and the Reds are discussing deals, some of which include Yasiel Puig going to Cincinnati and leaving L.A.
I've read this.
I think they'd love to get rid of Yusiel Puig.
I think they do. A couple of days. They're talking to a lot of teams about their outfielders, whether it's Kemp, whether it's Puig, whether it's Peterson,
almost like they're trying to move bodies out of the way so they can go bodies and money out of the way so that potentially they could go on a run for Bryce Harper.
Right.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Right. Or sure. AJ Pollock. Buster only kind of linked the Dodgers to AJ Pollock as well. Could you imagine a reimagined Dodgers outfielder with not only Bryce Harper in it, but AJ Pollock as well?
Yeah.
If they move a number of their outfielders, they could possibly achieve that, spend that money if they wanted to.
I don't know. Listen, if the Nationals are out on Bryce Harper and the Yankees are out on Bryce Harper, I mean, where's he going to go? I mean, how many options does he have? I mean, how many teams are going to pay $35 million to a guy?
Yeah.
And maybe he doesn't get that.
Maybe he doesn't.
I mean, you know what would be fascinating? If he gets less than what the Nationals offered him. I would love that.
That would be funny.
Hey, the Nationals offered you $30 million a year for 10 years. You turned it down, and now you're going to take $25 million from somebody else.
Yeah, that would be very funny. Torey Lovello today at the winter meetings, the Diamondbacks manager had a meeting with the media. This is kind of how it goes in between all the wheeling and dealing. A lot of baseball's top guys have these press availabilities. He talked on the record for the first time about the Goldie trade, said that Goldie felt like he had unfinished business in Arizona.
He felt like there was so much unfinished business in Arizona, and he felt bad about that. So I had to reassure him that he left everything he had on the field. The culture that he helped us and me create will be carried on, and one day when we do win a world championship, he's going to be a part of that, even though he won't be there physically.
Said specifically, Gambo, that he asked Mike Hazen to reconsider trading Paul Goldschmidt.
Yes, I had spoken to Mike about reconsidering several times, but as I was getting informed through the process, I know why Mike did that, and I trust the reason why he did that.
I mean, of course you're going to try to. I mean, Torrey knows that Goldie helps him win baseball games.
Absolutely.
You know, and Torrey had a bad year. He didn't do a good job managing last year. He wasn't his best. He was much better the year before. Last year he made a lot of mistakes. Team didn't do very well. Down the stretch, they kind of collapsed down the stretch. You have to be in first place most of the year. And I think, you know, he knows. So, listen, I mean, it's without Paul Goldschmidt, without AJ Pollock, without Patrick Corbin, I'm going to have my work cut out for me. It's going to be hard to contend. Like, it is going to be. You lost one of the best players in baseball. No manager's like, you know, any manager that doesn't fight to keep that guy is making a big mistake. Like, mm-hmm. you've got to go, listen, I know it doesn't work financially, and I know it's, we can get, but man, Paul, it's Paul Goldschmidt. Like, we win baseball games with him. Like, but let's keep in a Diamondback uniform. Well, the mistake may have been made, as we talked about. Maybe they should have 2 years ago. They should have torn up the contract and did it again.
I don't look at it that way. Well, I mean, about re-signing him a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
You had him on such a deal that you could have. I mean, I guess you could have, but man, how hard.
But once you got here, you knew he was going to be so close to free agency.
Sure, of course.
You know, find out what the market would pay for him, then you're out of it because you can't compete with those teams.
Look, having Paul Goldschmidt under a contract where you're paying him $9 million as you were a couple years ago for that 1 year, it's kind of like having Josh Rosen, right, under a rookie contract that allows you to spend money on other things. Having Paul Goldschmidt on such a team-friendly contract allowed the Diamondbacks to spend money on other places.
Yeah. If Goldschmidt was making a lot more, maybe they don't get cranky.
Sure. Ripping up that contract and saying, let's give him what he's really owed is a nice thing for Paul, but it really limits their ability to go out and do other things financially. So there was a benefit to him being under that super team-friendly contract all those years, and I don't know if it would have benefited them. It would now, because he'd still be here. But in the moment, would it have benefited them to rip up that contract 3 years ago and tack on an extra $70, $80, $90 million to the back end of his deal for three more years? You'd be better about having him now, but in the moment...
Having him now or having greater control to trade him. Like, you know,
yeah,
team,
right.
You know, if you got, instead of being a rental, he'd be a guy you're getting for 3 years.
Lovello also spoke about the closer. Yesterday, Mike Hazen made a suggestion that he believes the closer next year is on the roster now. Torrey was asked, do you know who your closer will be next year?
If you were going to come up here and arm wrestle me and force me to give you a decision, I'm going to probably start with Archie Bradley as the extreme back end of that equation. But still, we got to have those conversations. I haven't had them with Archie, but I know he's capable of doing it. He's got that presence. He's got that personality that wants to step into that situation. So I don't know. I don't know where it's going to take me right now, but those are conversations that Mike and I will have. But to answer your question, that's where I'd start right now on this day-to-day.
It's almost word for word what he told us 2 months ago, wasn't it, when the season ended?
He certainly hasn't changed his mind about, you know, where he is. But Archie's going to close.
But then, today, and I don't disagree with that, he kind of, in the same press availability, kind of walked it back a little bit.
You know, I just mentioned that I would probably, if you had a gun to my head, I would probably look at Archie as a closer. But, Yoshi's going to be in the conversation as well. He had a tremendous year. So, I don't know. I probably got a little ahead of myself. But we have some very capable back-end guys. And who lands in that closer spot, we've yet to determine. But we'll have those conversations.
Now, that makes me laugh. I probably got a little ahead of myself. I probably... probably shouldn't have been so candid about who I think the closer should be without checking with the appropriate people beforehand. So, you know what? Get back to me later. Get back to me in a few months. I'll tell you who the closer is.
Archie's the closer. I just wonder how many opportunities he's going to have for saves. No Corbin, no Goldie, no AJ. Let's see what they do in free agency. Let's see what they do in trades. I wonder if this team is, there should be less save opportunities for Archie than there was the last couple of years. For closers.
You're right. The rumor of the day when it comes to the Diamondbacks from the winter meetings comes from Nick Cafardo, who is a national baseball writer based in Boston. He works for the Boston Globe, NESN, and the MLB Network. He tweeted out about an hour ago, Jackie Bradley Jr. is high atop the Diamondbacks wish list to replace A.J. Pollock, according to a major league source.
Now, listen, great defensive player. Doesn't hit a whole lot, but usually does really good against right-handed pitchers. He's only 28, 2 years of control. Makes sense. You're probably going to have to give up something good to get him because he's such a great defensive center fielder.
That's the part that I don't know if it does make sense. What would you give up to get him? What would they want for Jackie Bradley Jr.? I mean, they don't need a shortstop, so it wouldn't be Ahmed. Starting pitching? I don't really think they need starting pitching. I don't know. I don't know what it would be.
I don't know that they have a lot of movable pieces, to be honest with you.
That's where it gets kind of challenging to think about what would you have to give up to get Jackie Bradley Jr., who'd be under contract for 2 more years. We are out of here. Suns basketball is next here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Holiday Heroes tomorrow starting at 10 a.m. We'll see you then from the GCU Golf Course.
Have a good night, everyone.